Welcome back to Retraced Echoes. As always, I'm your host. My name is Burton. Today, we're going to be stepping inside the chilling tale of the Allen House. Now, that's found in the good old state of Arkansas, and it's a mansion that's just as mysterious as it is haunted. Imagine walking through the door of a potential dream house. You go to your realtor and you say, "This is the one that I want." And they tell you, "Maybe you should consider a completely different property. This one has, let's say, a history." Well, that's exactly what happened in the year of 2005. Mark Spencer was drawn to a new opportunity in Monticello, Arkansas. Now, that promised not just a career advancement, but a doorway into an extraordinary chapter in his as well as his family's lives.
We found ourselves on North Main Street, and we came upon this somewhat run-down but really gorgeous old Victorian. My wife and I sat in the middle of the street just gawking at this house because it was just so attractive to us. My wife said to me, "If you buy me that house, you can take the job." And I said, "It doesn't look like the house was for sale." She said, "I don't care."
Now, even though Rebecca wanted the Allen house, they needed somewhere to live and they needed it now. So they ended up getting into a house that wasn't very far from the Allen house for the time being.
We would frequently drive by the Allen house, and one day I Googled Allen house, and I was surprised that all these websites came up about paranormal activity.
Intrigued but skeptical, Mark was initially very dismissive of the ghost stories that was surrounding the house. That is, after all, just tall tales told to scare little children. But as Mark and Rebecca was settling into their new surroundings, they was kind of confused on what to do. Their fascination with the Allen house, it was growing. But how do you tell someone you want to buy their house? Do you just go to the house, knock on the door and say, "Hey, saw your house, kind of like it"? Maybe instead they should go to a real estate agent, maybe have them start the process. They decided to do exactly that.
We visited a real estate office. Talked to a real estate agent. Just went in and said, "We're interested in this house. We just moved here and we're interested in a particular house on North Main Street. There's no sign in front of it. There was no indication that the house was for sale, but we really like it."
Now, the response from the real estate agent, it was not encouraging. She wanted to double check and make sure that she got the address correct. As soon as they gave her the address again, she goes, "That's the old Allen house. You don't want that house. That house has a certain history. You don't want it." Now, this was extremely confusing to both Mark and Rebecca both. Why would an agent not want to make a commission on selling a property? Especially one that somebody wants.
And it wasn't like, "Oh, I know the woman who owns the house and she loves it too much to even sell it." It wasn't anything like that. She's just said, "Oh, that house has a history."
The agent ended up saying that the house was haunted. This both stunned as well as determined Mark and Rebecca. If they were not willing to help them, they would need to go straight to the Allen house and speak directly to the owner. Now, the couple's very first visit to the house, it was as eerie as the legend suggested. And the house, it seemed to echo of the agent's warnings.
It was all kind of creepy because it was all kinds of run-down, as I said, and there was a radio on. We subsequently learned that the owner of the house left a radio on whenever she left the house when she was traveling. She would leave it on very loud, and she would leave it on an evangelical radio station, 24-hour fire and brimstone. And there's this voice emanating from the house shouting about hell. You know, "You're all going to hell," you know. And it sounded kind of like a radio.
Mark returns to the vehicle. He looks at Rebecca and he goes, "Maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea to look at possibly another property or maybe a few different properties." But she had her heart set. She wanted that residence. Now, the allure of the Allen house began to spread through the town like a wildfire, and Mark and Rebecca, they couldn't help but share their fascination for the Grand Victorian mansion on North Main Street. Now, everyone that lived around there, they were very quick to whisper a chilling caution.
People who lived in the town for a while had told us that we didn't want to buy the house. They said, oh, you don't want to buy that house. And I'd say, well, why not? They'd say, well, because it's haunted. And I'd say, oh, really? I found it all rather amusing, actually, that people were telling me not to buy the house because it was haunted.
Despite the warnings, destiny took a curious turn when the owner of the Allen House contacted Mark directly at his university office.
One day, the owner of the house called me at work here at my office at the university, and she said, I understand you want to buy my house. I said, well, would you be interested in selling your house? And she said, I might if I like you. And I said, okay, well, what do we need to do for you to find out whether you'd like us?
Now, even though the owner called on the phone, Mark and Rebecca had made it somewhat of a routine to drive by the house. If anything, it was deepening their connection to the house and its mysterious charm. Now, their intrigue, it turned into opportunity when they scheduled a visit to see inside. But just a few days before that scheduled visit, a sight from the street captured their attention. It was a woman, visibly in the second-story window, and she seemed somewhat engaged in quiet study.
And one of the kids, one of our kids, had pointed to the woman at first, said, look, there's a woman in the window. And we all looked, and, you know, it's my wife and three kids, and we're all saying, yeah, there's a woman in the window. It looked like maybe she was sitting at a little table, a table or desk, maybe reading or writing. Had this little lamp on next to her. That's what we all saw in them. My wife even said, you know, we finally shouldn't sit here and gawk like this. She'll think we're stalking her.
After their unexpected sighting of the mysterious figure in the window, Mark and Rebecca's curiosity for the Allen House had intensified. The image of the woman, quietly sitting, as if absorbed in her own thoughts, that was very curious to them. And on the evening of the appointment inside the house, the Spencers walked right through the grand doorway. They explored all the lower levels, the weight of the history and countless untold stories it surrounded them, each room a chapter of a long and storied past. Finally, they made their way upstairs. There was a lot of mystery as they went upstairs because, if anything, it captivated them from the very street below. The second floor loomed ahead, and the gateway to the master bedroom is where they had seen the elusive figure.
The owner took us to the master bedroom, and she opened the door. She immediately apologized for her not being able to step inside the room because the room was packed full of boxes and furniture, and she had used the master bedroom exclusively for storage. And I said, but we saw you in the window the other night. She said, no, I wasn't even here the other night. And besides, you can see, can't even get to the window. And I said, oh, yeah, okay, well. And I'm looking around. I'm thinking to myself, well, okay, maybe it's a different room, you know. And I said, oh, okay. And I was about to just let it go. And then the owner said, have people been telling you that the house is haunted? And I said, yeah, I've heard those stories. And she said, well, it is. And I thought, oh, okay, you know, I just kind of went along, you know. I was thinking, okay, well, this lady's kind of nutty, you know, but I'm being polite to her because I'm interested in buying her house.
As Mark and Rebecca toured the very historic Allen House, their conversation with the owner took a decisive turn towards the future of the mansion.
She said she had a feeling that we were meant to have the house, that she had never thought about selling the house before, that she had always told people that she would let the house fall into the ground before she would sell it or She would dismantle it and move it to Dallas. That was one of her plans, she said. At one point, she said that she just loved the house and she couldn't imagine selling it. Now, she could imagine selling it. And of course, I'm thinking, okay, lady, how much are you going to want for this place? I thought she was setting me up for asking some enormous price for this house.
Now, with the conversation steering towards a potential sale, Mark started talking price. He was half expecting a very huge number. But she came back to him very matter-of-fact and said, how about $185,000? Now, granted, this was a long time ago, and that's a lot of money, but we are talking about an 8,000-square-foot mansion. So Mark, he wrote a check for the earnest money, and he drafted a contract. Now, it took almost an entire year to finalize the purchase, but we're not going to cover that in this podcast. But when they did finalize the purchase, the reality of their decision began to sink in. They were about to make the Allen House their brand new home. Now, this was a place that was obviously brimming with history as well as mystery. And the preparations they were underway with each box and piece of furniture is almost like it stirred the air with the whispers of the past. Settling into the Allen House brought somewhat of a, almost like a blend of the ordinary challenges and the eerie occurrences. Now, one morning as they unpacked and they started to arrange their new life, an unsettling incident occurred that would leave Rebecca questioning reality.
I was in the dining room, and I happened to notice that our son Jacob just walked right past me down the hallway, and I said, Jacob, where are you going?
He didn't respond. His silence, it was echoing down the hallway. Puzzled and slightly concerned, Rebecca followed the path that Jacob had taken. As she reached the kitchen, she paused. Jacob was nowhere to be seen, so she continued her search, Rebecca's tension growing with each empty room that she checked. Finally, she reached the toy room. Her heart pounded as she opened the door.
Jacob and Josh were sitting there playing video games, so I asked Jacob why he ignored me, and he said, Mom, I don't know what you're talking about. I've been sitting here playing video games for like an hour.
Rebecca, she just stood there. She didn't understand exactly what happened. If Jacob had been here the entire time, then who or what did she just follow down the hall? This unsettling encounter, it was just the very beginning. It was a reminder that their new home, it held secrets yet to be uncovered. What was this entity, and what did it want with the Spencers? As they would soon discover, the Allen House was eager to reveal its haunting past. One ghostly encounter at a time. Now, as the Spencer family settled into the Allen House, their new home quickly became a focal point for the very curious and for the brave, drawn by the tales of its haunting past.
They would show up at the door. They would say, hey, we want to come and see inside. And I'm like, well, I don't know who told you could come into my house, but you can't. I just knew right from the start, when the kids started showing up at the door, and then later adults showing up at the door, the house was of interest to everybody.
Now, while the curiosity from the town grows, the Spencers, they've become more focused on the monumental task of restoring the historic mansion. It was a labor of love and one of necessity.
I was working 50 to 60 hours a week at the university, and then every spare moment I had, I was at home working around the house. I don't think I could have worked as hard as I did on the house if I wasn't so much in love with the house.
Mark's fascination for the house extends to the very mysterious attic. This is where a very chilling discovery awaits.
I was fascinated with the attic. In a way, I loved the attic, but I was also afraid of it. One of the first things that I found in the attic was half of a photograph of an infant, and on the back, there was enough of an inscription to determine that it said Miss Libell, and I was wondering, why would anyone tear a photograph of a baby in half?
While Mark is alone in the attic, surrounded by the echoes of the past, his fascination soon turns to unease. As he's going through all the pieces of history, Something unusual catches his eye. His shadow seems much darker than it should be. Casted against the rafters, his eyes are almost fixated to it, his mind playing tricks. Is that my shadow? Is there someone behind me? Or is there something else? Standing still, Mark watches the play of light and shadows with a mixture of curiosity as well as dread.
I stood there kind of mesmerized because it was such an interesting play of light and shadow. I was trying to figure out where the light was coming from and how my shadow was getting cast all the way around the other side of the attic. What was really strange was that when I moved, my shadow didn't, and I thought, oh, okay, well, I've been doing too much. At the time, I was determined really not to think much about it. I figured, well, there must be some explanation. I don't have it at the moment.
The very next day, Rebecca takes what little information she has about Lindell, and she begins to dig.
The only thing I really understood about Lindell from the newspaper was her obituary. That said the most about her. It really said that she was a very well-loved woman who cared about everyone but herself.
As they peel back layers of the house's haunting past, the Spencers find themselves drawn deeper into its mysterious embrace, uncovering stories that they're just as haunting as they are sad. Now, Rebecca, she was about to encounter her own mysterious event that would change her view of their new home.
I heard four very heavy footsteps above me in the attic. I was absolutely certain that someone had snuck into the house and was hiding out up there.
The sounds of the footsteps heard overhead? They sent a shiver right down Rebecca's spine. And after they stopped, the silence that followed, it was unnervingly profound.
It made me pause. It made me go back and think of some of the stories people had said about the house. Things that I had disregarded, things I thought were silly. Now it became a reality to me. Those became real stories because now they were my stories.
As the days passed, the Spencers faced yet again another challenge. This time, a financial one. With the continuous needs to renovate the historical mansion, it was taking its toll.
We were quickly going broke with these renovations, wallpaper and lumber, and all these things are pretty expensive.
Now, just as their financial problems began to peak, a surprising solution emerged. In the mail, they received yet again another letter from another paranormal group that was interested in visiting the house. And with the constant visitation from curious, uninvited locals, Rebecca had an idea. Why not do a ghost tour? Halloween was coming up after all, and they could charge $5 a head. Maybe make enough money to help with, if anything, some of the renovations.
Well, when Rebecca came up with the idea to give us some tours on Halloween, I thought, well, it can't hurt.
On Halloween night, the Allen House opened its doors to the public for the very first time, transforming into a beacon for the curious as well as the brave.
I thought it would be great if 50 people showed up and paid to tour the house, and we had 600.
Some of the people, when they came up on the porch to wait their turn to go inside the house, were so scared that they were shaken. They thought something was going to jump out and get them, and they were going to have a real, true haunted experience.
Now, the Spencers, they were smart. They hired a group of local students to lead the tour. Who better than to give a tour than the students to talk about all the spooky stuff? One of those students is Shane Curry.
The first group was really more interested in, like, the ghost stories. That's what they really came for.
Shane would walk around the house and tell the story of Lindell Allen. This is the room where she lost her life, right over there. It was Christmas Eve, 1948. Patty Allen, Lindell's mother, she was hosting the annual Christmas party. Lindell, of course, she was in attendance. Lindell seemed lost in thought, though, upset, her mood much darker than normal. All of a sudden, inside the house, as he told the story, the lights began to flicker. Maybe a light bulb was starting to go. The lights started to kind of steady, so he continued his story. He would say, by the end of the party, it was obvious that Lindell was very disheartened, but no one could tell why such a cheerful woman seemed so depressed. At one point late in the evening, she prepared a plate of hors d'oeuvres and a glass of punch, and she went upstairs. Later that very same night, Liddell decided to swallow a bottle of pills. She suffered for about a week before she finally passed away. Her mother came home and sealed this very room. No one came in here for the next 37 years, until the Allen family finally sold the house. That is when stories began. At the very end of the story, the group was fascinated. They went all out, tore flickering lights. It was all very scary, which is what they all wanted. When all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the closet door sprung open and a shirt flew across the room and hit one of the guys in the group. Nice trick. You rigged it up with some wires or something?
I explained that that was not part of the tour. They didn't believe me, so I told them, hey, go find the wires or whatever you believe caused the paranormal activity. Everyone looked at me, you know. How did you do that? That's so cool. I'm like, I don't know how that just happened. I'm freaking out because I don't know why that just happened. He goes and he looks and there's nothing but a pile of clothes. People were definitely freaked out once they realized that it was not, you know, a gimmick, that we hadn't planned for the shirt to even fly out of the closet.
Now, some of them wanted to leave. They were just done. Others kind of wanted to hurry up the tour, but they wanted to finish it up. For me, I would say that it was obvious that for Liddell, she didn't want a tour of her home. Maybe she wanted to keep the secret to herself, but either way, she was hell-bent on making sure that they'd never come back. A simple tour of the haunted Allen house has turned into much more than anyone had planned. Now, as the tour group was leaving the bedroom, one of the people in the group glanced back and she froze. There in the dim light of the hallway stood a figure straight out of the history books. The very image of Liddell Allen.
We had an older lady on the tour who came up to me as she was leaving the house and told me that when she was on the second floor, she saw a lady in a Victorian dress. She was saying she thought that she had seen Liddell.
The old woman's voice trembled with concern. Why is she so sad? She asked. That's a very haunting question. One that the tour did not answer, and if we're being completely honest, one that the tour could not answer. The details of Liddell's tragic demise were known, but the reason that she would do such a heinous act, especially upon herself, it remained shrouded in mystery. Now, after the thrill of Halloween had passed, life at the Allen's house, it kind of went back to normal. Kinda. Rebecca was alone downstairs in the house. She was cleaning. All of a sudden, the silence of the house was broken by their own record player. She heard it spinning. It's playing a song. Now, she would walk up, she would make a very startling discovery. The needle? It wasn't even on the record.
I put the needle down and it stopped instantly. And what's odd about that is that it's wound up with a spring. So if anyone would have actually wound it up and you were to put the needle down, it would either play or it would slowly wind itself out. But it stopped instantly, so it wasn't wound at all.
She had to tell Mark all about this, so Rebecca, she headed upstairs to find him. As she reached the very top of the stairs, there was a flicker of movement that caught her eye. As she looked over at it, there, as the older woman had described, was the silhouette of a woman.
It was controlling me. I had to feel what it wanted me to feel, and it was about 5 or 6 seconds of almost sheer terror.
The presence of Liddell was trying to communicate through these mysterious manifestations.
I still wasn't really convinced, I guess, for myself. It wasn't that I thought that she was crazy, but I suppose I just wanted to see it for myself.
Now, with each unexplained event, Mark's skepticism kind of began to go away. Finally, he made a decision.
I wanted concrete evidence of paranormal activity before I was going to be able to say, yeah, this house is haunted.
And so, the decision was made to bring in experts in the realm of the paranormal. If anything, they hoped to potentially uncover the truths hidden within the walls of the home. Who did they bring in? It was a paranormal group called Louisiana Spirits. Now, that's a team that has somewhat of an association with TAPS. Most of you probably know TAPS, Transatlantic Paranormal Society. They used to have a hit TV show called Ghost Hunters. Well, they was affiliated. Now, this for them was uncharted territory. They decide to leave the house in the hands of the investigators that very evening. In fact, let Bess, the head investigator, kind of tell you about that.
You could feel the history of that house. You could feel the house. I don't know that I've ever been any other place that you could just feel the spirit of the house, like the Allen House.
We really didn't understand what the protocol was for having paranormal investigators in one's home, so we sent the kids off to a friend's house for the night, and Rebecca and I decided that we would go out and leave the house to the investigators.
It was the very first time that they left anyone alone in their own home.
Rebecca's concerns were that she always felt that the Allen House had its own distinctive personality. She looked at the house as being almost a person in and of itself, and she was just kind of worried that, as strange as this sound, the house would not like us being there.
That night, I felt something was off. Mark felt something was a little off. We just weren't sure what to do, so we chose to leave, but I think we both knew right away from the start that we shouldn't do that.
I felt a little dizzy coming down the stairs. I didn't think too much of it at the time. I thought, well, maybe I'll need to eat something, but I did. I felt like the air was suddenly charged in some way.
As Mark and Rebecca left, the investigation continued under the eerie watch of the house. Armed with an EMF meter, Bess explored the attic, the device flickering as they moved. As she walked around, she would hear the name Liddell Allen.
I thought one of the other investigators was coming up behind me and had just said her name. She had not been behind me, so where that voice came from, I don't know.
Meanwhile, Rachel Ellis had set up a camera in the master bedroom.
I could hear a lady singing really softly, but there was no one in there with me.
All of a sudden, the atmosphere intensified as they saw almost like lightning flashing outside the window. The lights inside the house flickered before everything went dark.
There was no electricity whatsoever, but our recorders were still on. I saw sparks outside just before the lights went out. It must have been a transformer. The neighbors still had power, and we realized that, well, it couldn't have been the transformer because we're the only house with no electricity. The house next door on either side, the house across the street, their lights were on. So it was just us.
Concerned, the investigators reached out to Mark and to Rebecca. They said, maybe it was time to come home.
We were just a few blocks away when my phone rang. It was one of the investigators. My immediate feeling was, I knew it. I knew we shouldn't have left the house.
As they pulled into the driveway, Bess greeted them at the door. She then led the couple back to the electrical box at the very back of the house.
I'm not a big believer in coincidences, so it just seemed too odd to just say, well, it's just a limb that just happened to fall off the tree just as we's beginning our investigation. It was just too strange.
It's perfectly still. There's no breeze. It's not raining. The tree limb is a big leafy limb, or what appears to be a perfectly healthy tree.
With the power out and their equipment reliant on electricity, the blackout effectively put an end to the night's investigation, leaving way more questions than it gave any answers. But a few days later, the blackout that abruptly ended their investigation revealed some secrets. Bess Maxwell, she had emailed Mark and said, I just sent you an audio file. I want you to check it out. She had captured something unexplained on the recorder just seconds after the power outage. During the eerie silence that followed the blackout, the recorders picked up several disembodied voices. Now, these recorders were not set up on electric. They were battery operated, but they picked up several EVPs. As the investigators was kind of trying to figure out what happened, Bess is heard speculating in the background saying, "It must have been a transformer," only to be met with a very clear and chilling response from the void. "Not a transformer." This was repeated 3 times.
Hearing all those voices just really freaked me out. Hearing all the EVPs that LA Spirits recorded during that investigation really changed my life, I think.
For Bess, the nature of the interactions, they were extremely startling.
A lot of things that we deal with are residual hauntings, which are not intelligent. It's just like something playing over and over on a tape recorder. You can get EVPs from that too, but this was not that. This was an intelligent haunting. This was something in the house that had an agenda.
Now, the implications of the recording suggested that a presence in the house was not just replaying past events, but interacting with the living. And Bess had a theory on this.
We thought if maybe we could reveal why Liddell killed herself and what was going on with her, maybe then she'd be done with her earthly business.
Now, the investigators, they were drawn deeper into the mystery of the Allen house. They thought that maybe if they could uncover why Liddell would do such a thing to herself in the past, maybe that would cause her, or should I say, if anything, at this point, her spirit, to find some peace. Well, it was just a few days later, Mark had something happen to him that he had never had happen before.
One Saturday morning, I woke up and I immediately felt the compulsion to go up to the attic. Now, I was arguing with myself that there wasn't any reason to go up to that attic because I had scoured the attic many times and I was convinced that I had found everything that there was to be found. But this voice in my head just kept nagging me. We've got to go up to the attic. I looked down at that opening and at first I didn't see anything. Still, there was this voice in my head telling me, "Look closer." And it was almost like a hand was on my shoulder pushing me down. I opened up this large brown envelope, and it was full of smaller white envelopes, and these were all letters. And they were all postmarked in 1948, and they were all addressed to Liddell Allen Bonner. They were written to her, obviously, in the last year of her life. I thought I was dreaming. I really was waiting to wake up.
As Mark looked at these newly discovered letters, a chilling moment unfolded. He heard his name whispered from behind. As he turned around, his heart skipped a beat as he saw a figure resembling the description of Liddell.
I literally blinked fast several times, and it was Rebecca coming towards me. I think the transition between seeing Liddell and seeing Rebecca, I think that it was meant that way. I think that Liddell was probably using Rebecca's energy to show herself to me.
That afternoon, Mark and Rebecca, they read through all of the 82 letters, uncovering the very secretive past of Liddell Allen.
Obviously, these were letters from a man who was madly in love with Liddell.
The letters were between Liddell and Prentice Hemingway Savage. He was a gentleman who once dated Liddell during their teenage years and had somewhat rekindled their romance as adults. Now, that was despite the complexities that he was married.
Reality just got in the way, and this man, he couldn't leave his wife because he couldn't accept the scandal that his wife was going to stir up in the newspaper because he was the vice president at Texaco Oil.
Now, to give you an idea, to fill in the blanks, on Christmas night, 1948, driven by despair of unfulfilled promises and shattered dreams, Liddell chose her tragic escape from her heartache.
In those early letters and seeing the evolution of their romance, because I knew how the story was going to end, they did get together in June and most of July in 1948. Liddell come up with some story about wanting to visit her friend's mother who lived in Stillwater, Minnesota. And she
She had a friend named Mary, and Mary's mother lived in Stillwater, Minnesota, and Liddell, she decided she wanted to meet Mary's mother, and this was just her ruse to go see Princess. And so she took the train up to Minnesota, and she and Princess spent about 3 weeks cruising around in his Cadillac, visiting tourist sites and lodges and all through Minnesota, Wisconsin, and parts of Canada. And then he left her at the train station in Milwaukee on his birthday in late July. And by that point, they were madly, passionately in love with each other and promising to be together for the rest of their lives. It wasn't a problem for Liddell because she had been divorced for 20 years. It was a problem for Princess because he was married. And she was pretty certain that Princess was going to follow through about his promise of leaving his wife. And to his credit, he did broach the subject of divorce with his wife as soon as he got back home. She was used to him being gone a lot because he traveled so much for business. And so that's how he'd gotten away with being with Liddell for so long. But his first night back, he and his wife stayed up all night and talking about divorce, mainly him talking about divorce. He said in a letter to Liddell that morning that his wife really didn't have much to say because she was stunned. She didn't understand, of course. He wasn't going to tell her why he wanted the divorce. He just, you know, all the reasons you know about how they didn't really have much in common, that they had grown apart and that sort of thing. After this, his wife, she had an opportunity to think about it for a couple days and talk to an attorney. She decided that she didn't want a divorce, and that's when the trouble really began with Prentice, because he wasn't going to get it, his quick, easy divorce that he told Liddell that he's going to get. And so on Christmas Eve, Liddell, she went to the post office and checked her post office box, found no letters from Prentice. It had been a while. He had gone to New York City on a business trip. He had said in his last letter he didn't know if he's going to be able to write again. So, she went to the post office, then she went to the drugstore. That's where she'd normally read her letters, you know, drink coffee. And on this particular occasion, she purchased mercury cyanide tablets. Now, back then, that was a common treatment for topical sores at the time. You'd take a tablet, rub it on your skin. The pharmacist tell you, now, don't swallow these. Don't get them too close to your mouth. Now, I think Liddell attended the, you know, was hoping that Prentice would surprise her at the Christmas party. I think she waited, hoping that Prentice would show up because they had talked about that in their letters with him and her, him being there. And late in the evening, when he didn't show up, she went upstairs and took those mercury cyanide tablets. And so with my discovery of the letters, that mystery was solved.
I felt sad for her, but at the same time, I felt a sort of happiness that now we knew, and obviously she wanted us to know. We would not have discovered those letters any other way. She had to have wanted us to know the story. She had nothing left and she couldn't pretend anymore. From the first moment we saw this house till now, all of it had felt like it was destiny or some sort of fate that brought us to this town. I really feel like we are where we're supposed to be.
Convinced that Liddell had chosen him to share her story, Mark decided to write a book talking about the experiences of the house, the haunting, and the untimely death of Liddell Allen Bonner. Very tragic story, but I feel like somewhat fulfilling in the end. Now, even though this story is complete, if you enjoy this type of a story, I have another podcast called Deceptive Reality. Every single Friday, we look at a different unsolved mystery. I do this podcast with my buddy. His name is Nick. So if unsolved mysteries is also something that you enjoy, definitely check out Deceptive Reality. Again, it comes out every Friday. Also, if you've not rated this podcast wherever you're listening, if you could give a good old thumbs up, I would definitely appreciate that. Also, if you've not subscribed to the YouTube channel, definitely hit that subscribe button. Well, even though this story has come to the end, I've enjoyed telling you the story, and hopefully you enjoyed it too. Until I see you in the very next podcast, goodbye. I love this story so much.